WTMA.com.
The TMA Morning Show with Charlie James.
And a very good morning to you. It's 7:34, 26 minutes until 8 o'clock on the Big Talker, 1250 WTMA, WTMA.com. We are being joined this morning by the one, the only, Michelle Malkin. Good morning, Michelle. How are you?
Good. How are you, Charlie?
I'm doing fantastic. And, of course, you are no stranger to Washington, D.C. You have been a pundit for a while now. You're on CRTV.
Correct.
Got your own show on there. How's that going?
It's going fantastic.
Good, good. Are you glad you are not on CNN? Because they are having quite the difficult past couple of weeks, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. It is about time. The biased chickens are coming home to roost.
Oh, boy. We had Van Jones just saying yesterday that this whole the whole thing with Russia is nothing but a nothing burger. They're just looking for ratings. When is it? And CNN this morning said that it was a dangerous time for reporters.
Yeah.
It's a dangerous time. Well, when reporters are trying to bring down a presidency on nothing but rumor and speculation, don't you think they ought to be in a little bit of peril?
Yeah, that's right. So what they're saying is that the exercise of free speech by the critics of CNN is somehow tantamount to incitement to violence. This is what they always do. And they're trying to play the victim card here. Mm-hmm. And they're the ones that are the perpetrators of journalistic malpractice.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it is a great credit to my friend James O'Keefe and Project Veritas that they are bringing this to light. And I will remind you that it was about a month ago when people were mocking James. They said that he had nothing when it came to exposing CNN bias. But he always holds his cards close to his chest and never, never underestimate that young man.
When you hear that he is going to leak something. I remember the other day everybody was like, all right, what is this going to be? So he's promising more leaks throughout the week. So let's talk a little bit about immigration. Why is it so difficult to simply, you know, everybody talks about the wall. I don't want a wall. I don't want to have to build a wall. And we wouldn't have to build a wall if we would just enforce the laws that are on the books. Am I right?
Well, I do believe in a wall, and I think it's from the 25, 26 years that I've been covering this issue, but it is not the be-all and end-all of immigration enforcement reform. It is just one piece of the puzzle. Mm-hmm. You know, the open borders types have long hijacked the phrase comprehensive immigration reform, but we need comprehensive immigration enforcement and border security reform, and it does start with walls. Walls and fences are effective, and the thing is that it has to be combined with a massive increase in manpower on both the southern and northern border. I appreciated this from working in Los Angeles at a major metropolitan newspaper to moving up to Seattle. And of course, people forget that during the millennium there was a jihadist who had been led into Canada because of their lax refugee and immigration policies, who just almost nearly traipsed across the border with a trunk full of explosives on his way to L.A. to bomb LAX to ring in the new year. It has to be all of those things, as well as interior enforcement shoring up, more detention space, and of course, extreme vetting that begins at consular offices run by the State Department overseas. A wall is a big piece of that, and it has to be built quickly and smartly. But, you know, I think that one of the problems that you run into in Washington, D.C. is that it's not just the progressive left that opposes these measures. It's the corporate hijacked Republican Party establishment elite. And that's what Trump is up against.
Do you think the corporate establishment elite is starting to get a little bit nervous right now?
Oh, yes.
So the folks that are the McCains, the Grahams, and those types, they've got to be worried about what's coming up 2018, 2020.
Yes, and that's why I want to say something that might run counter to what a lot of what you're hearing today. So it is no coincidence that today we've got two pieces of marquee immigration enforcement legislation that are coming up in the House, Cade's Law and an additional piece of anti-sanctuary policy legislation. Now, you've got the House GOP leadership and Paul Ryan that essentially has sided against Donald Trump on so many of these immigration enforcement issues. You know, over the years, he has blindly funded the refugee resettlement racket, and he considers Luis Gutierrez one of his closest friends. You know what Luis Gutierrez was doing on the House floor yesterday? Trashing this conference and blaming us for a climate of hate.
Yeah.
I would like Paul Ryan to go back on that floor today and condemn Luis Gutierrez for inciting hatred and violence against us.
Yeah, he was talking yesterday on the floor. He said, just a couple of blocks from here, they're spewing hate out of a hotel on the corner there.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't heard anybody.
No, you know what I have seen? I have seen a lot of love.
Yeah.
Love for this country.
Yeah.
And love for among all of these families who are advocating for their relatives who have died at the hands of illegal alien criminals.
That's right.
I've been inspired by this conference, as I have been every year. And I was back here in 2005, and I've supported the work that the grassroots activists of FAIR have done. You know, long before Donald Trump was talking about making America great again, these people were doing it.
Right. That's exactly right. I mean, when you talk to these families that have lost a loved one to illegal immigration, none of them is full of hatred. The only thing they want is justice.
Yes.
And it's amazing the love that they have in their hearts. This is it. This is all we want. We want fair immigration reform in this country. We don't want to stop. I mean, certainly when you talk about, we don't want to stop Canadians coming in from this country. We want to stop the people that are from these states where we can't do extreme vetting. We don't know who these people are. We just want to make sure that the policies are enforced.
Yes, right. People like this Tunisian who came from Canada, crossed the northern border, and ended up at the Flint airport stabbing one of our police officers, yelling Allahu Akbar.
Right.
Right? So we don't want to welcome every single last person who's trying to clamor to get into break into our country.
Did you get a sense of optimism when the Supreme Court upheld part of the president's travel ban?
I think more of a sense of relief.
Yeah.
you know, that even Ruth Bader Ginsburg had to acknowledge that Donald Trump has the plenary power to exclude anybody who wants to from coming into this country, not just for national security reasons, but economic security reasons, any reason. But, you know, that even that was settling for half a loaf, because remember, the revised travel ban was greatly diluted and weakened down to try to capitulate to some of the people who are complaining. You know, all you have to do is invoke the Islamophobia card and everybody's knees bend.
Yeah. You know, we've been talking with several Border Patrol agents over the past couple of days. They have, I guess, optimism is the number one, or increased morale.
Yes.
They keep talking about that, how they're finally going to be able to not only do their jobs, but protect themselves while doing the job.
Yes.
Why did we lose that for 8 years? I mean, I think we all know the reason why, but it just seems to me like when you put someone in a position of enforcing the law, you ought to give them the tools to do their job.
In fact, all of our men and women on the front lines who protect and serve were under siege during the Obama years. Our Border Patrol, our ICE agents, our local law enforcement officers who were willing to work and cooperate with Homeland Security. And of course, all of our military people overseas and at home who felt like they had their hands tied behind their backs. So yes, they finally have a moment to exhale.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. And when you talk about a war, it's about another country invading a country. Isn't that what's going on in our southern border? We're being invaded.
Yes, and Article 4, Section 4 of our Constitution talks about our government's duty to protect against invasion.
That's right, and we've got to do that. And, you know, so many people. And you know, Michelle, we're going to wrap up with this. We were talking with Fred and Peggy Davis yesterday, some great ranchers from Arizona. They have seen over the past years, it has gone from the stereotypical mother, father, child coming to America to make a better life for themselves. That has gone from that to drug cartels, gun runners, human traffickers, crossing our borders. These are the bad actors we need to be able to stop.
Yeah, that's important. And it's especially important to counter the, you know, sob story rhetoric of the open borders left and some of the right, that the only people who are coming across the border are people who are just trying to make a living and do the jobs that, quote unquote, no one else will do in America. It's the big lie of the immigration left.
That's right. It is the big lie. Michelle Malkin, we'll call her the big truth. How about that? Michelle Malkin, thank you so much for being on the program this morning, and we'll hope to talk to you soon. 556-1250 is the number to be on the program this morning. Of course, we are in Washington, D.C. at the FAIR Conference, the Federation for American Immigration Reforms, and Representative Gutierrez got on the floor of the House yesterday and basically accused us, I would be included in that, of hate speech. There's a bunch of hate speech coming out of the Phoenix Park Hotel this morning. Bunch of right-wing radicals here in the hotel. Now, here's my thought. Mr. Gutierrez, how much danger did you put us in with these ridiculous statements of yours? Now, we know the climate out there that's going on right now in this country. We know that left-wing violence, which is being completely underreported by the media, we know that that is rampant. All you got to do is look out at what happened right over there in Arlington, Virginia. Look at that. Take a look at what happened out at Berkeley, California, University of California at Berkeley. Take a look at what goes on out there. These statements like this to accuse, and this is a guy who has not once set foot inside of this hotel. There is nobody at this Radio Row conference over the past couple of days that has interviewed Representative Gutierrez. Not a single one. But yet, with something he knows absolutely nothing about, he is going to stand up and accuse the people at this conference of hate speech. Not one person here has said anything hateful, anything mean, anything nasty. The only thing that we are calling for was a simple fact that we need to enforce our immigration laws in this country. We need to make sure that the people that are coming into this country are properly vetted. We have heard some horror stories. And Mr. Gutierrez, why are you not addressing the horror stories that these people have been telling us over the past couple of days? We talked yesterday. I was trying to think of the man's name. This is a Border Patrol agent, while they're down there, I think it was in Tempe, near the border, they have to actually have wire cages put around their vehicles, over the windows, over the because people throw rocks at them from across the border. They are waging I'll call it a prehistoric war right there across the border. But these agents are being beaten. Oh, and the guy said yesterday, listen, if a Border Patrol agent is beaten by an illegal alien, they cannot prosecute unless there is blood. Can you believe that? Now, where is Mr. Gutierrez and his defense of these Border Patrol agents? He doesn't want our laws enforced because it would decrease his voter block.
The TMA Morning Show with Charlie James.
Good morning. It's 12 minutes past 8 o'clock on The Big Talker, 1250 WTMA. WTMA.com as we're broadcasting live from Washington, D.C. this morning at the FAIR Conference, the Federation for American Immigration Reform. And I tell you what, it's been a fantastic couple of days. We've gotten to talk to a lot of great people here. Of course, I want to thank Michelle Malkin for being on a few minutes ago. So what are we really talking about? I mean, this isn't what Representative Gutierrez tried to paint yesterday. I think very irresponsibly so, saying that there was a bunch of hate speech coming out of this hotel. Said that on the floor of the House yesterday. And really, what was he calling for? What was he calling for? Was he calling for people to come down and protest? Was he calling for people to... Now, this guy knows how much violence has been going on from the left over the past couple of, you know, months, we'll say. But we can only imagine that some people out there could have seen this as a call to come down and incite violence. We know that there was a handful. I'll tell you, I expected a lot more protest here this year than last year. Last year, we had a couple of people show up, but it was no big deal. It certainly wasn't organized in any way. It didn't seem to be very organized, and really haven't seen. I think somebody said they had seen some protesters here yesterday afternoon. I didn't, and I was having dinner right outside the restaurant, or right outside the hotel at the restaurant here yesterday. So we were talking with a friend yesterday. Hold on. We were talking to a friend yesterday about immigration, and she describes herself as a conflicted conservative and a conflicted liberal. And when it comes to immigration, she is a woman like my wife who has lived in several countries around the world. And she doesn't have a problem. And I think a lot of people, this is one of the failures of the right, I believe, to actually lay out what we're talking about when we're talking about immigration reform. We don't want everybody to be banned from this country. We don't want people who want to come here to make this a better country. We don't want them banned. We want the people that are here to hurt this country to be banned. We want to make sure we know who's coming into this country. Some of the three non-negotiable points about immigration. Number one, as a sovereign nation, we, the United States, have an unfettered right to determine when and under what conditions it will admit foreign nationals. Why is that unreasonable? Every other country does it. If you go to New Zealand and you're there on, let's just say it's a 90-day visa, go there for 90 days, well, at the end of that 90 days, they come knock on your door and they say, hey, it's been really great to having you here in New Zealand, but your 90 days is up and you got to go. But for some reason in this country, we just let you stay. I don't understand that. We've got one of the most sophisticated monitoring systems in the entire world, and we can't simply make these people leave when their visas are up. Number two, aliens will be admitted to this country only in such cases and upon such conditions as the United States may see fit to prescribe. And guess who gets to determine that? The President of the United States. He has plenary power to decide who comes to this country. Number three, aliens will be admitted to the United States only when such admissions serve the interest of the American people. Thank you so much. If you're going to come here and be an advantage to this country and to its people, welcome. If not, sorry, we're going to pass you by and let somebody in that is going to be an advantage. I don't understand why people are having a big problem over this. Well, we do know why. That's almost a rhetorical question, because we know that the Democrats are trying to increase their voter base, and the more people that we can get in here that are dependent on the government, the more people are going to vote to keep them in office.
Hurricane season is here, and 1250 WTMA wants to make sure you're ready. Download the WTMA Hurricane Preparedness Guide from WTMA.com. It's free, and it's full of life-saving information. Brought to you in part by Property Casualty Insurers Association of America. It's Charlie James on 1250 WTMA.
Good morning to you. It's 23 minutes past 8 o'clock on the Big Talker, 1250 WTMA, WTMA.com. Well, it's official. I think the most money that we have spent while in Washington, D.C. has been on cold medicine for me. Am I right about that? Trying to keep me up and going. So Sheila just braved the walk over to Union Station, which is, it's where the Metro comes in. Down here near the Capitol, and it's a big mall. It's a big mall. They got a Walgreens over there, which I didn't see the Walgreens yesterday, and we pretty much walked right by it because all I saw was that big W, which the Walgreens W is pretty much exactly like the Washington Nationals logo on their baseball team. So I was like, oh, there's a... Well, they sure like their Washington Nationals here. No, it's Walgreens. All right, 556-1250 is the number to be on the program this morning. That's 556-1250. Did you see where thieves stole $2,000 worth of sunglasses from downtown? $2,000. Now, I did a quick calculator data entry here and found out that that is $285.71 per pair of sunglasses. $285 for a pair of sunglasses that these folks stole. And really, you going to go to jail for sunglasses? I don't think so. I don't think so. So they stole from the Gucci store. I don't know if you guys know this, but there's only one sunglass manufacturer basically in the entire world. It's a company called Luxottica. They make every brand of sunglasses. They just put different logos on them. So, all right, 556-1250 is the number to be on the program this morning. That's 556-1250. Coming up in just a few minutes, we're going to be talking with Chris Chmielinski with Numbers USA. Also, Dr. Kelly Ward will be with us coming up at 9:35 this morning. Michael Harrison from Talkers Magazine will be on with us. And want to remind you, you know, it is hurricane season, and you need to be prepared. We want to make sure you're ready. You can download the WTMA Hurricane Preparedness Guide from WTMA.com. It's free. It's full of life-saving information, and it's brought to you in part by Property Casualty Insurers Association of America. And, yes, ma'am, you're waiting for me? I'm sorry?
I just have a question.
Oh, okay. I'm on the air right now. I'll be right with you. Okay. 556-1250 is the number. We got a lot of people walking through the halls here, so we'll be talking with them. So what is going on here in Washington, D.C.? We hold their feet to the fire conference here in Washington, D.C. This is a very big event. We got about 60 talk show hosts here this morning, and we're all talking about immigration, and it's a huge opportunity for us to actually do something about immigration reform here in this country. Now, we know that President Trump's travel ban has been upheld by the Supreme Court, and at least in part, this is kind of a give and a take, you know, give a little, take a little. But if you go back and read his book, Art of the Deal, you will know that that's what he's all about. And he's fully prepared to walk away from a deal if it doesn't seem to be in the best interest. And we might be seeing this coming up with the new health care bill that the Senate has proposed. You get folks there like Rand Paul is not for it, and several others who are saying they're going to be voting against it. But we will find out. I mean, the president, the one good thing about him is, excuse me, he is always willing to sit down and negotiate. So we'll talk more about that. But right now we're talking about immigration. We're talking about immigration numbers. And I didn't know this. Legal immigration here in the United States. About 75% of population growth is due to immigration. 75%. And that percentage is going to increase over the coming years. Back in 1965, we had 296,697 legal immigrants in the United States. 2010, it had gone up to 1,042,645 legal immigrants. The United States adds a new legal immigrant, every 32 seconds. Now, these are people who go through the process. They're the people who actually stand up and say, you know what, I want to be an American citizen. I'm going to do, and people like Nick Adams and Eric Corcoran, who go through what it takes to be a legal American citizen. They are willing to sit down and do the legwork that it takes. But a lot of people don't want to do that because, well, maybe they might have a background that they don't want anybody to know about. Maybe they just don't want to let anybody know who they are. 11.9 million illegal immigrants in 2012 alone. 11.9 million people who are... What we saw yesterday, that the average illegal alien family uses $14,000 in resources, well over what they would ever pay in taxes.
1250 WTMA. Morning Show with Charlie James.
Good morning. It's 8:39, 21 minutes until 9 o'clock on the Big Talker 1250 WTMA, WTMA.com. We're talking immigration from the FAIR Conference, the Federation for American Immigration Reform here in Washington, D.C. We've got Christian Maliski from Numbers USA. It's a very interesting website that actually grades our representatives as far as immigration is concerned. Good morning, Chris. How are you?
Good, thanks. Good morning to you, too.
Glad to have you on the program. We were just talking about some of the representatives of note from South Carolina. Jeff Duncan gets an A+. Joe Wilson gives an A+. Mark Sanford, my congressman, gets an A+. But Trey Gowdy coming in with a C grade on this. Why is that, Chris?
Well, he's co-sponsored a bill called the Enlist Act, which is it's actually gotten quite a number of Republicans to join it. I think there are over 100 Republicans who are co-sponsoring the bill. And essentially what it is it's a military amnesty for illegal aliens. So illegal aliens who enlist in the military would receive provisional legal permanent status. And then after they serve a certain amount of time, they would get green cards. So it's something that we oppose. The military's been downsizing. We oppose any amnesty.
Right.
But the military's been downsizing for quite a while. We don't know if the the boost in funding that the Trump administration is getting and pushing for will start to increase troop sizes again. But essentially, it's giving spots to folks that are in the country illegally that could go to Americans who want to be in the military. And, you know, are illegal aliens joining the military because they want to defend the country, or are they joining it because they want a green card?
Was that the original intent of the bill?
No, I think it was introduced by it's been pushed mostly by a couple of congressmen from California, David Valadeo, and the other one is escaping my mind right now. But both of them were former military officers. So these are men who served alongside or claim to have served alongside illegal aliens, and that can happen. Sometimes the vetting process through the military enlistment process, especially back during the Iraqi war, when they were taking enlistees at pretty high rates.
Right.
Sometimes somebody in the country illegally would slip through. Sometimes somebody was in the country legally and they would slip into illegal status while they were in the military. Their visa would expire. So some of those folks are certainly deserving of receiving a green card if they've actually fought for America and joined the military because they wanted to.
Yeah.
I think there's a little bit, I think that's a little bit of where their intentions are, but the fact is that they've opened it up to illegal aliens who are not in the military and can join it to simply get a green card.
It's just another avenue for amnesty.
It's another avenue for amnesty, and again, as I said, you know, it's taking spots away from deserving Americans who might want those spots. And again, what's the incentive? Are they joining because they want to fight, or are they joining because they want amnesty?
So when we're talking about numbers, by the way, we're speaking with Chris Timolinski from Numbers USA. What is what would a good number be for legal immigrants into the United States?
Well, that's the bread and butter question for us. 1996, a little bit of history. 1996 was the last time there was a bipartisan congressional commission on immigration reform, and they recommended reducing, at that time, immigration was up around 1 million per year, and that's where it remains today.
Right.
It's been there ever since the Immigration Act of 1990 passed. So since the mid-90s, we've been at about 1 million. Prior to 1990 and post-Great Wave, the average was around 250,000. That's actually the historical average if you look back since the government's been recording immigration numbers since the early 1800s. Mm. The average over time is between 250,000 and 500,000. So that commission that was formed in 1996 recommended that we roll back immigration numbers from 1 million down to about 500,000.
Right.
And that's really what spurred the founding of Numbers USA. Our founder and president, Roy Beck, wrote a book at the same exact time, found he made in his book the same recommendations that the commission made. unbeknownst to him, he didn't know that that's what the commission right. was going to recommend. It was just a coincidence, but created some great momentum for him and again spurred the creation of Numbers USA. And we've been fighting ever since to get those numbers down to the historical averages.
Right, of about, what, 250?
We'd love to see it down to 250,000, yeah. but right now we're throwing most of our effort behind a bill introduced by Senator Tom Cotton from mm-hmm. Arkansas and David Perdue from Georgia called the RAISE Act.
Right.
And the RAISE Act follows the recommendations of that commission that was chaired by Barbara Jordan. It's referred to as the Jordan Commission back in the mid-90s. And they recommended ending chain migration, family chain migration in the visa lottery. Mm-hmm. And the effect of that would be to reduce legal immigration from 1 million down to about 500,000 per year.
Nice. So how many illegal immigrants right now? I'm sure there's no hard and fast number because we don't know.
Right.
But how many estimate come across the border each year?
So coming across the border each year, it's been, you know, anywhere from, you'll see this misleading statistic that migration mm-hmm. from Mexico is net zero. Well, yes, from right. Mexico it is, but it's not typically Mexicans who have been crossing the border illegally right. in recent years. It's been Central Americans who have been crossing the border. So yeah. really, it's a straw man's argument. But the numbers have actually remained fairly flat over throughout the Obama administration. They actually they were at about 11 million when he took office, and they right. remained at about 11 million. But we did start to see them creep up. And the reason for that was because you had the border surge of 2014, sure, yeah. which was widely reported. And that continued on through 2015. So I think the population is probably in the high 11 millions, approaching 12 million wow. right now. But I think you'll certainly see it stabilize at worst, if not start to go down under the Trump administration. Mm-hmm. Certainly the motivation for folks to come here right, illegally right. is not, now that the administration has stepped up some enforcement efforts. So, again, the administration's taking a stronger stand. Fewer folks are coming. We're seeing that in the border apprehension numbers, which tend to be an indicator of what illegal border crossings right. are as well. You know, the estimates that we believe that there's about 11 to 12 million. We tend to go with the numbers that are reported by the Department of Homeland Security, Census Bureau, Center for Immigration Studies, and the Pew Hispanic Center. All four of those agencies agree that it's about 11 to 12 million.
But, Chris, these are just good, hardworking people, and they're paying taxes, and they're benefiting our economy. Why are we against anything like that?
So, yeah, they are paying taxes, but Robert Rector, who's a great he's the nation's leading expert on welfare use for the Heritage Foundation.
Right.
He has crunched the numbers on this, and he has found that illegal aliens typically pay about $10,000 to $15,000 less in taxes than the government services that they use.
Right.
So you think,
right.
yes, if an illegal alien family, if a family is here illegally and they're paying taxes and their tax burden, the amount that they're paying in taxes every single year through income taxes, if they're using stolen Social Security numbers or an right. ITIN that they've obtained, or just state and local, they're paying sales tax.
Right.
And they're probably paying real estate tax if they're renting a place or if they've managed to buy a home.
Sure.
So they are paying taxes. But again, if they have children in the schools, for example, it usually takes an American family needs to make, you know, over $80,000 a year for them to just break even on right. the amount of services that they receive compared to the amount of taxes that they pay. So yes, they are paying taxes, but are they paying an amount of taxes to cover the services right, yeah. that they're using with the government? No. They're using our roads, things like that. Now, yes, they do boost the economy. Anytime you have more workers, you're going to have more production, which is going to increase GDP. But what's the cost? In many cases, you're stagnating or reducing wages for competing workers.
That's right, yeah.
And that's what we've seen through a great economist on this, George Borjas, who's done some work for the Center for Immigration Studies, has found that, yeah. And you see it in just the general data. Wages in industries that have large immigrant mm-hmm. proportions to them tend to have lower or stagnant wages over the last decade or so.
Do you know where we are right now? Because the president had said that he wants to make coming into this country, crossing the border illegally, a felony.
Mm-hmm.
All right, have we gone anywhere with that?
Not yet.
Okay.
But the federal government certainly has latitude in that mm-hmm. area. You know, they have the right now under current law to deport every single person who crosses the border illegally.
Right.
And a lot of it, if they're not. A lot of it has to do with the amount of detention space. Right now, there's only a little more than 30,000 right. beds available to them on the border, and most of them are full.
Well, then why not just send them back?
Well, and you know, that's where groups like the ACLU step in and things yeah. like that and say, oh, you got to make sure they go through due process and that sort of stuff. We need more immigration judges is the bottom
yeah.
line.
Yeah.
And Attorney General Jeff Sessions has done a great job. He's starting to shift some immigration judges from across the country down to the border to get these proceedings done more quickly.
Right.
But the backlog right now for our immigration courts is about 5 years. And we need to fix
yeah.
that. And the only way we can fix it is to get more judges.
And they're in the wind.
Yeah.
By the time that happens.
Exactly.
But even if crossing the border is not a felony right now, using a stolen or fake Social Security number is a felony. And they should be deported for that. Chris, we appreciate you being on the program this morning. Thank you, buddy.
Thanks for having me.
Chris Timlinski from Numbers USA.
WTMA.
Now, here's more of the TMA Morning Show with Charlie James.
And a very good morning to you. It is 8:56, just 4 minutes until 9 o'clock on the Big Talker 1250 WTMA, WTMA.com. Let's go to Mike out on James Island, see what he has to say. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good.
What's up, buddy?
Well, I was listening to the program that you were doing right before you took your break, and they were talking about immigrants.
Yeah.
One of the things I noticed, I don't know if they talked about it, was the amount of money that's getting sent out of the country every
oh, yeah.
payday. Did they talk about that?
No, we didn't address that, but that is a wow. huge issue, and they're using it. You know, they use electronic funds transfer, and right. there's some people that have said maybe we ought to put a bit of a tax on that because that's money that's just flying out of the United States.
Exactly. And if you think about it, one example, I was at Walmart to get a money order for my daughter, and mm-hmm. there was maybe 15 or so foreign people there. And I would say the average they were sending was like $300, $400, $500. Okay,
right.
Well, I'm standing there. There goes $4,000, $5,000 from one Walmart. And if they do that twice a month, all of a sudden it starts adding to millions, maybe billions of dollars per year.
Absolutely, and that's another drain on our economy. All that money's not staying here.
No, I know. And what's it funding down there? Or is it maybe some money laundering going on?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think in what they do is they will go in and they will get these transfers that are just below the level where the federal government will start looking at them with a slanted eye. But they know what they're doing. They've learned to game the system.
Yeah.
So, all right, Mike, I appreciate you calling in. Thanks a lot, buddy. Let's go to, can we go to Carl right now? He's in North Charleston. Carl, how are you?
I'm better than I deserve. Thank you. How are you?
Good. What's up?
Oh, now, the previous segment, they were talking about CNN, you know,
yeah.
blah, blah, blah. A million-dollar idea, whoever wants it.
Right.
CNN board game.
Uh-huh.
So you get a board game. You have cards with little bits of news stories, and there's a little spinny wheel in the middle. When it's your turn, you draw a card, you spin the wheel, and you have to determine whether it's real or fake news and make up a real or fake news story from the cards. And the end of the game, whoever wins gets a Pulitzer.
That's perfect. That's great. But, so, Carl, I'm afraid you may have just given away a million-dollar idea there, buddy.
That's fine. I have lots. It's fine.
Okay.
It's not that big a deal to me. I kid you not. I have no money, and I don't care. I don't want to be rich. But anyway, if anybody wants to do it, I think I'm fairly sure there's someone who could have a ball with it if the lawyers
absolutely
don't sue them to death.
1250 TMA Total News. Depend on it.
The TMA Morning Show with Charlie James.
Good morning. It's 9:06, 6 minutes past 9 o'clock on the Big Talker, 1250 WTMA, WTMA.com. We're being joined right now by Michael Harrison. He is with Talkers Magazine. Good morning, Michael. How are you?
Good, Charlie. Thanks for having me on.
Glad to have you on. Representative Luis Gutierrez on the House of the Floor yesterday called what's going on here in this hotel in Washington, D.C., hate speech. Have you seen hate speech, Michael?
No. You know, hate speech, that's a word that is such hyperbole. I've been dealing with that for the 27 years we've been publishing Talkers.
Right.
And people call anything they disagree with now hateful. I mean, this is a problem beyond talk radio. Yeah. This is a problem in terms of the First Amendment. This is a problem in terms of dialogue in this country.
Yeah.
The fear of offending somebody. And elevating everything to an extreme in terms of describing...
Right. Right.
What really is healthy discourse under the First Amendment. Nowadays, fair and the immigration issue is far more in the sunshine than it was in earlier days of this conference.
Right.
I remember when it first began, and that's why I came to it, because I'm a nonpartisan. I don't get involved in the politics. I'm only into the First Amendment.
Right.
People say, well, what are you doing here? You're not a political guy in terms of overtly being partisan. I said, First Amendment. This is a major First Amendment issue, and people have to be able to discuss immigration reform without being called a racist.
Right.
It's not about racism. It's about the law.
Yeah, exactly right.
It's legitimate. It's a legitimate argument.
Exactly right. So how important is talk radio to issues like this in combating some of that rhetoric about this being hate speech or this being racist or anything like that? What a role does talk radio play in this?
Well, first of all, talk radio is not a monolith. So I'm sure there are some hateful people on talk radio out there, as there are in all walks of life.
Right.
But talk radio, in terms of this immigration reform issue, has been the place that's kept this issue alive in the media. I mean, there were times in different years over the last 10, 11 years of this conference, of this radio row, where the only place that anybody talked about immigration reform was talk radio. Mm. Other media, and I don't like the term mainstream media, because I think talk radio is a part of the mainstream media, too. It's a wide, shallow mainstream we live in today. Even the New York Times is a niche.
Right.
But the media ignored immigration reform. Mm-hmm. Donald Trump came along, and he made that one of his... the hallmarks of his campaign. As a matter of fact, that opening speech he did about the Mexican rapists and all that is what, and a lot of people said, oh, how's he ever going to get elected saying that?
Yeah.
And then, oh my gosh, look, an anomaly, a blip. He's leading in the polls.
Yeah.
That
but he's
changed
done. He's
it.
Done. Yeah. I mean, he's done. He's done when he said what he said about McCain. He was done. He's been done so many times during his campaign.
And he's still done. And
he's done.
But he's not done.
Right. He's done.
He's not done. And I'm not particularly a Trump fan.
Mm-hmm.
What I am, though, is I tell the truth as I see it.
Right.
And the truth is this guy is very much a product of the 21st century sociology and media that we haven't seen in politics on this level, clearly until this point.
That's right.
And that's what's happening. When you have a 37% approval rating, based on the old paradigm, that's paltry. That's the lowest approval rating of any. But when you have a 37-38% approval rating in 2017, and your 37% approval rating is all absolutely zealous and into it and emotional and passionate about it, and it's focused, that is a almost unstoppable force in today's fractured society.
Yeah.
Who else has that many people who are passionately for one way of approaching something and one leader about it? Now, that could be dangerous.
It could be, certainly.
But it is effective. He's not done. That's the point.
And his supporters are all in.
That's
the 37% are all in.
That's the point.
Yeah. So when you talk about passion, talk radio, a very passionate format, probably the most passionate format these days, that's out there. How does talk radio, does it fuel the passion, or is it the mirror or is it?
Well, the mirror
light?
Fuels. The mirror tends to fuel. Yeah. You get up in the morning, you look at yourself in the mirror, go, oh, I need to pluck that eyebrow. Right, oh, yeah. I need to, you know, get that thing out of my tooth.
Right. Oh, I shouldn't look in the mirror with my reading glasses on.
Exactly. So the relationship between reality and the media is a give and a take, and we call it media theory, and it gets complicated.
Right.
So the answer is, it fuels it, but it can't. What I've learned is you can't get people to go for a free tuna fish sandwich at a deli if they're not hungry. You can't make people do what they don't want to do. Mm-hmm. So the media has to, and it goes back to this targeting thing, get the pulse of the people and where they're at to begin with. Mm-hmm. You can go on and talk till you're blue in the face if it's about things that don't interest people or that they are not particularly interested in.
Right.
In terms of their own interests politically.
Yeah. And I also find that you can be the most knowledgeable person in the room, but if you aren't a good storyteller and you can't package it in a way that the people will accept it, it's very difficult to get their passion, too.
There's an element of show business in everything today. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's got to be entertaining. The modern media, the modern technology is rewiring the human nervous system. Attention spans are shorter and shorter. Nobody's immune to that.
Yeah, that's true.
I find myself watching old movies that I used to think were great and going, oh, that's really slow.
Yeah,
and
this
I go, oh, my gosh.
Lasting forever.
Yeah, oh, my gosh, I'm that way.
Yeah.
You know, and I walk around with my smartphone in my hand. I can't wait till the day that they implant it in my brain so I don't have to worry about losing it.
That's right. Don't have to worry about it. So the future of talk radio, is it brighter than ever?
I think the future of talk media is bright. Radio, it depends on what you mean by radio.
Right.
I don't know about AM and FM.
Right.
I don't know about, 20th century technology, but I do know that the concept of doing programs about issues and having hosts, callers, and guests, that combination, that form, Matt, I think will be around for years to come.
Yeah, we're seeing a lot of folks doing live streaming on Facebook, a lot of people that, I mean, we've got everything. I mean, heck, we've got a television studio right here in our pockets with our phones. So talk radio, I think, is certainly jumping on that bandwagon.
Well, no question. It has to or it won't survive.
You got it.
We're coming into an era, I call it the media station, where there will not be separate newspapers that are newspaper organizations and television stations and radio. Everything will be multimedia. There'll be organizations that operate across platforms. Mm-hmm. And the website will be around for a long time.
Yeah.
And then the apps are extensions of that. But a newspaper will have a TV show. A newspaper will have a radio show. A radio station will have a TV show.
Mm-hmm.
There'll be text that you can read. Talk show hosts blog. Yeah. Now you read articles about the shows that you're listening to. Yes. So it's a media station that's emerging.
Media station. I like that. Well, Michael, of course, you can be heard on the Talk Radio Countdown.
Oh, yeah.
On WTMA.
A pleasure.
Saturdays, 6 to 8. We appreciate you being on with us.
Thanks for having me, Charlie. Good job.
Thank you.
1250.
It's Charlie James on 1250 WTMA.
And good morning. It's 20 minutes past 9 o'clock on the Big Talker, 1250 WTMA. WTMA.com. Coming up around 9:35, we're going to be talking with Dr. Kelly Ward, who is running against Representative Jeff Flake in Arizona for his seat. Of course, she lost in the primaries to John McCain. So we'll be talking with her about her issues, what she's going to be running on, and, of course, immigration. Now, the House is expected to pass a bill today that would hand another victory for President Trump. There's actually two bills here, Kate's Law and the No Sanctuary for Criminals Act. They would install harsher penalties for repeat illegal entry into the United States. Now, you can certainly imagine that the Democrats are fighting this. They're looking for the no votes. They're trying to get this trashed. Unlikely either is going to have enough votes to pass the Senate. I don't understand why. The Senate struggled with Kate's Law last year, and a bunch of people there at the Immigration and Civil Liberties, like the ACLU and groups like that, they've come out fighting against the bill, saying that they bolster a deportation force, an anti-immigration agenda from the Trump administration. They're saying it's just going to help the president to deport people. And my answer to that is, yeah, that's exactly what it's going to help them do. Absolutely. You remember Kate Steinle was shot in San Francisco a couple of years ago when this illegal immigrant who had been deported several times, and this is really where we started to sit up and take notice about sanctuary cities, because San Francisco being a sanctuary city, you know, if you are up for deportation, San Francisco's not going to turn you over to ICE. They're not going to deport you. They're going to welcome you. Here you are. Come on in. Be a part of us. As wacky and nutty as we may be a part of us. So this illegal immigrant had been deported five times, comes back into the country, repeat felon, shoots Kate Steinle. Shoots Kate Steinle. She dies in her father's arms there in San Francisco. So this guy was supposed to be held over to be turned over to ICE for deportation, but because San Francisco is a sanctuary city, they didn't do it. They simply let him go about his business, and now Kate Steinle is no longer with us because of this. So when the folks like the ACLU and groups like that want to stand up and fight bills that protect the American citizen, what do they really... That's what irritates me no end, and a lot of people that are here at this conference today. It irritates them that groups like the ACLU will put these people's rights before yours. They will put their rights before your protection. Why is it? Why is your safety less important to these groups than these people's so-called rights? And by the way, this guy was not an American citizen. What rights does he have when he crosses into our country illegally? What rights? None, certainly guaranteed by the Constitution. None at all. Those rights apply to American citizens. So turn his butt around and send, well, he's got to have due process, Charlie. And we just heard, 5 years. 5 years. Chris Chmielewski from Numbers USA just told us it takes 5 years for an immigration. And don't think that's not by design. Don't think that wasn't by design by the Obama administration. Let's get rid of all of these immigration judges. Let's not appoint these people. Let's drag the system out as long as we can possibly drag it out. And that way the folks can come in here, and by the time, you know, their court date comes up, well, they're nowhere to be found. They've got a stolen or a made-up fake Social Security number, and now they are quote-unquote productive members of society, right? Well, no. They're still here illegally, and they're still using fake Social Security numbers in a lot of cases. So let's drag the process out as long as possible in order to make sure that these people can stay here in the United States. Here, we ought to have that turnaround policy. If you get caught in this country illegally, you get sent back. Well, you got to have due process, Charlie. Why? They're not an American citizen. They're not an American citizen, so you send them back to whether. Do you think any other country does this? You walk over into Mexico. You cross the border into Mexico and see what happens if you're there illegally. Certainly the folks from Central America heading into Mexico, they send them right back. Why does this country have to be special? Why do we have to be the ones that sit back and say, oh, well, we're going to be the bleeding hearts of the world, and we're just going to let everybody in who wants to come in because we're so nice? Well, now you got Kate Steinle, who's dead, because we did this. This guy was dangerous. He'd been deported. And we need to make sure that those people stay deported. Let's take a call right now. Let's see. We will go to Matthew, Mount Pleasant, line one. Good morning, Matthew. How are you?
I'm well, Charlie. Thank you.
What's up?
We have hundreds of federal laws on the books, and as a U.S. citizen, I must abide by them at all times, or the federal government comes and gets me and locks me up.
Yeah.
I've never heard the media or a politician or anybody else explain to me how somebody just made a unilateral decision to say, you know what, these particular federal laws, because they suit our purposes, we're going to ignore them. At what point do I get to ignore a federal law for free card?
Yeah, well, at one point do you get the ignore paying your taxes card?
Exactly. Here are people who have come into the country illegally who are not even citizens who are being showered with exclusions when U.S. citizens are basically, you know, their feet are held to the fire on every potential federal law that there is. And, you know, try breaking a federal law as a U.S. citizen, you'll end up in the can.
Oh, absolutely you will. And they will find you.
But nobody...
They will absolutely find... I don't get it either, Matthew.
Nobody ever asks the questions. I want to hear someone ask it on the news or a politician or somebody asked. Somebody said, well, wait a minute. This is a law. So if you're able to bend the law for your own purposes, when can we bend the law for our purposes if it suits us? And when are you going to stop enforcing other particular laws? This ought to set a precedent to say you either enforce all federal laws or you enforce no federal laws.
That's right. I agree with you, Matthew. We've got to make sure that, and again, you know, if we enforce these laws, I appreciate you calling in, Matthew. If we enforce these laws the way that we should have enforced the laws, we wouldn't need a wall. We wouldn't need everything that they're talking about right now. But because word has gotten out that you can come to this country and come on in, don't worry about it, they're not going to send you back, then of course we get that huge flood of illegal immigrants here. But you know what? The word has also gotten out that we're going to start cracking down on illegal immigration in this country. And guess what's happened over the past 5.5 months of the Trump administration? Border crossings have gone down because the word has gotten out that we're not going to be tolerating this anymore. And if we can pass bills like Kate's Law and bills like that, and the more that word gets out, you know what? That traffic is going to start slowing down. And maybe we can get to the point where we don't even need the wall anymore. And our laws will be our wall. Wouldn't that be a fantastic time? And they can start increasing or enforcing the laws on illegal aliens the same as they do on American citizens.
WTMA, the TMA Morning Show with Charlie James.
And a good morning to you. It's 9:37, 23 minutes until 10 o'clock on the Big Talker 1250 WTMA, WTMA.com. We are joined this morning by Dr. Kelly Ward. How are you?
I'm doing great, Charlie. Thank you. I'm so glad to be here with you.
Absolutely. We are at the FAIR Conference here in Washington, D.C., brought to you in part by Advanced Plumbing, Heating, and Air. And we are talking about immigration. Let's talk a little bit first about your campaign against Jeff Flake there in Arizona. Yeah. Are you planning on spending $50 million like they did in the 6th District of Georgia?
I certainly hope not.
Yeah.
You know, that was a record, and I hope it maintains its record,
it stays,
you know, its Guinness
way.
Status for many years to come. I thought, you know, it's kind of ridiculous to think of all the outside money that came in to try to buy a Democrat Senate seat or a Democrat House seat.
Yeah.
And the Democrat Party really has no message any longer other than radical environmentalists, environmentalism and social engineering.
And we're not Trump.
No, right,
that's,
right. And hate Trump.
Right,
hate Trump,
that's
hate
it.
Trump. Yes,
that's it.
Exactly.
So what are you running on? What are the issues that you are running against Jeff Flake on?
Well, I do call him Sanctuary Senator Jeff Flake.
Yes.
So immigration must be in there, right?
Yes.
I mean, he's terrible on immigration, and immigration is important to the people of Arizona as well as the people of the United States because illegal immigration has affected health care, education, public safety, corrections. So border security and immigration and stopping illegal immigration are very high on my priority list.
Right.
That's why I'm here at the fair conference, of course,
exactly.
You know, because I want to be with like-minded people. I want to figure out how we can get together, we can be motivated, and we can act to do the things that need to be done. Of course, healthcare is still going to be on the plate.
Sure.
We see what's happening in Washington, D.C. right now. The Senate is being an obstructionary body as usual. We will still be, because I'm a family physician, I've been in the trenches in medicine for my entire career, and we've got to have some experts who are trying to shape the direction that we go in healthcare. Of course, I would like to go into a free market direction,
not into a
government direction. So
right.
We'll see what happens. I like to hear that Rand Paul has something out that looks like maybe something much better. So I hope that's the surprise that we get when they come back from the recess.
That would be fantastic. Now, of course, you know, we're talking about immigration. What is the, in your idea, what is the answer to our immigration problem out there? There are two bills before the House today, Kate's Law and another bill. But what can we do to curb illegal immigration into this country?
Yeah. Well, first and foremost, we have to secure the border.
Right.
And that basically takes a four-pronged approach. We do need a big, beautiful wall. We need a physical barrier of some sort. We need to utilize technology to the fullest. We need to empower our Border Patrol and our ICE agents to do the job they were hired to do. And the last piece is to make sure that people who want to come here and sneak in illegally, they understand there are consequences to those actions rather than rewards that they were getting under the Obama administration. If we do those four things, it's going to go a long way to stopping illegal immigration. Now, those bills that are before Congress, they're no-brainers for Republicans.
Yeah.
Kate's Law, it's been on the books. I can't believe it wasn't signed into law already.
Right.
Stop sanctuary cities. We can't have lawlessness in our cities. And so those things should pass with flying colors, I think, through the House.
Mm-hmm.
But again, the Senate is likely to be an obstructionary body and because the president's already said he'll sign them.
Yeah.
So we've got to get it through the two bodies and get it to the president's desk.
Sanctuary cities. I don't understand what these leaders in some of these cities are trying to do, because it just seems like why promote lawlessness in your city when you are basically, it doesn't matter if you're an elected official, you are a de facto law enforcement officer, aren't you?
Yes. Well, you swear an oath to uphold the Constitution and our laws, the laws of our country.
Right.
And I think it's pretty ironic that they say we're going to be a sanctuary city and we're not going to enforce these laws, but please keep pouring the money into our coffers from both the state level and the federal level. I think the states should rein them in as well. I think the states should say no more. We're not going to give you money, Tucson, Phoenix, Flagstaff. If you want to be sanctuaries, you're on your own. And the federal government should say, no, we can't have a sanctuary state in California, for goodness sake. We've got to put our foot down and we've got to enforce our laws.
So you mentioned something just a second ago, and I wanted to bring up the ability for our Border Patrol to do their job. Talked to several Border Patrol agents here, and they have said one thing almost collectively, that since January the 20th, morale has gone through the roof.
Yes.
And just having someone in the White House that supports you in your job is so important to these people.
I agree. I mean, I have many people who supported me in my last campaign and who support me this time that work for the Border Patrol.
Right.
And what they told me again and again and again was that the morale was dismal because they were doing things like having the kids from Central America. Now, you see me putting that the kids
the
in
air quotes.
They're having to babysit children who are supposedly unaccompanied minors in detention facilities, changing diapers, you know, doing things that are not the job of the Border Patrol. The Border Patrol is supposed to stop people from coming into this country in the first place. They aren't supposed to be the welcome wagon. They aren't supposed to be handing out coupons, Welcome to America. They aren't supposed to be giving bus tickets from Phoenix to points all over the United States and then telling people, come back in 5, 6, 7 years and you'll get your court date. No, that is not what they're supposed to do.
Why can't we? We're talking with Dr. Kelly Ward from Arizona. Why can't we just turn them around at the border? That's one thing I don't understand. Why does the ACLU have such a problem with that? Again, rhetorical question, I know, because they're trying to build up a Democratic voter base.
Yes.
But what is the problem with just saying, hey, Nice try.
Yes, this isn't your place. Go on.
Let's turn you back around.
I agree. Well, that's why we need the physical barrier.
Yeah.
So that people, I mean, you know, maybe there are some people who know there's not a right and wrong way to come here. I find that hard to believe, but maybe.
Right.
If there's a wall, if there is a giant fence, if there are people on the border, they are going to realize that they have a right way and a wrong way to enter this country. And I welcome the people that want to come the right way.
The right way.
That's right. But persons here illegally, because some people are offended by the term illegal alien, which they are illegal aliens, but if you don't like that, use the term persons here illegally.
Yes.
Because anybody who has a problem with that then must be a Nancy Pelosi minion.
Exactly. So let's talk about the legal way, the right way. Do we need to streamline that process?
You know, we probably do, but we can't even tell if we need to or
not. Right.
Because things are so gummed up by all the people who have come here illegally.
Yeah.
In Phoenix, the federal court docket is 75% people here on reentry problems. That's what's taking up all of the court time. If we could clear those out, I think that the people who are trying to come here legally would find that it is much more streamlined already without changing the laws one bit.
Right. We just can't get them through for all the illegals here. Dr. Kelly Ward, good luck in your campaign against Jeff Flake.
Thank you, Charlie.
It was great seeing you.
Great seeing you. Hey, people can come to kellyward.com. They can join the campaign, join the effort. I know you can't vote for me in South Carolina, but I can vote for you from the U.S. Senate.
We love it. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
We will talk to you soon.
1250 WTMA.
Now, the TMA Morning Show continues with Charlie James.
And a very good morning. It's 9 minutes until 10 o'clock on The Big Talker, 1250 WTMA, WTMA.com. Let's go to Mount Pleasant and talk with Bob. Good morning, Bob. How are you?
Not bad. How are you today?
Good, good. What's up, buddy?
I was reading in both Forbes magazine and Fortune magazine, plus other periodicals, about the repeal, if they do repeal Obamacare. And this is now... Forbes magazine is by no stretch of the imagination a bastion of liberal news. It's pretty conservative
stuff.
Right, right. Okay, now, this is what they're saying. If they repeal, I don't know why nobody's addressing this, but if they repeal the ACA, the potential is you could lose between 2 to 2.5 million jobs nationwide. Because all of a sudden, if Medicaid is reduced, what's going to happen is the smaller hospitals, the rural hospitals, even in the health insurance industry, there's going to be layoffs because there's not going to be the funds there from the government or the states, rather, to help support that. So, I mean, I've looked at three different periodicals on this, and all of I don't hear this being brought up. I mean, you talk about wanting to create jobs, and if there's a way to do it and massage or, you know, change some of the tenets of Obamacare, that's fine. But to repeal it.
Well, then let's just go ahead and have the government create all the jobs. Right?
I'm confused.
If Medicaid is bolstering these jobs up, and Medicaid is a government program, then why not just have the government create jobs on its own? Why involve the private sector at all?
You can do both, but what I don't understand your seriously. I'm not trying to be arbitrary. I don't understand your rationale. All I've said is that if they eliminate Obamacare, the potential of losing 2 to 2.5 million jobs. Now, as a U.S. citizen, are you prepared personally, philosophically to see that many jobs go away?
Well, you just said potential, so there's nothing set in stone. But being a conservative and being someone who believes in smaller government, if these jobs are government created, then they are at the whim of the United States government.
You can say that for anything. You can say that for the Defense Department.
Right. Yeah.
You can say that for every. You can say that for virtually every branch of government. I mean.
I'm in a town right now, Bob. Where I would imagine 70 to 80% of the jobs are government supported.
Yeah. So, I mean, if tax, look, it's almost impossible to zero base budget in today's real world. But all I'm saying is this, one of the mantras of not only Republicans but Democrats creating jobs, well, if they repeal this law, whatever you want to call it, the right. ACA, there's a potential of losing, not forget the human aspect of it in terms of what people need in these, particularly in rural communities, you're going to lose a ton of jobs. And again, and virtually everything revolves. Look at the Pentagon. I mean, I think they have 40,000 or some ridiculous amount of employees in the Pentagon.
Right.
And not just that. I mean, in all these various. So the government does provide a service, and that's why we pay taxes. Mm-hmm. And the other thing I wanted to mention to you, when they talked about the, I'm going on a different subject now. When they talk about the Muslim ban or the ban in these countries, the one country,
right that goes into effect tonight.
Right. The one country they should be talking about, based on what we know, is Russia. That's who we should be banning. I mean, these guys meddled in our election. I don't care if it's a Republican or a Democrat. They've meddled in our election. I mean, these guys, I mean, it's factual stuff. And yet,
but we're not banning the reason we are banning these six countries now are because they don't have a strong central state. We cannot verify who these people are when they travel here.
I have no problem with that, but I'm saying if basically the Russians have declared cyber war on this country, and they should be banned. I mean, if I was running the show here, which obviously I'm not, I would break up diplomatic relations with Russia. I mean, these are bad people.
But see, that's the thing. When you're talking about it, now you look at what's happening with the way CNN has treated this, and it's a big nothing burger, the collusion with the Russians and all of that. You're talking about the potential to create an international incident. Is that something you're willing to do?
I'm willing to.
When we have basically, Bob, done the same thing in elections around the world?
You know something? Look, we know that Russia has meddled in our elections.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're a democracy. Russia's really not a democracy. You know that.
Right. Well, we meddled in the Israeli elections. Okay, we meddled in the Brexit vote.
So what are you saying, that we should let this pass?
No, I'm not saying we should let it pass.
Yeah,
but I'm not willing to go to war with Russia over it.
I'm not talking about going to war. I'm talking about breaking off diplomatic relations.
It's the law of unintended consequences, Bob. The law of unintended consequences.
No, that's not true.
It is.
No, it isn't true. These guys are bad people. If you want to talk about breaking off relations, I'll tell you who we should be breaking off is Saudi Arabia.
Now I'll agree with you on that one, Bob. I don't understand why Saudi's not on that list. Bob, no. I appreciate it very much. Thank you. Appreciate it, sir, for calling in. Let's go to Sam out in Ladson's real quick. Ladson, real quick, and get a response. What do you think about Bob's call, Sam?
I don't understand about people like him. He stood there, and correct me if I'm wrong, didn't he tell you that if they appealed Obamacare, that potentially millions of jobs are going to be lost because of, what was it, Medicaid or Medicare?
Right, yeah, Medicaid.
Well, who does that fool think created those jobs with his overspending?
Which is the point that I was trying to make. I think it was Jefferson that said a government that can, you know, that can make you dependent on it can enslave you.
Yeah. Well,
you know, the more you are dependent on the government, the more you're enslaved by it.
That man was one of the very few voice-controlled Democrats. He has one point of view. He cannot see anybody else's point of view, and he is incapable of rational thought. I mean, Forbes magazine said, you know?
I mean,
if Forbes magazine says that, hey, Bob, whatever your name was, you should stop breathing today because you're polluting the atmosphere, he'd probably try it.
There you go. Sam, I appreciate you calling in. Thank you, buddy. We're running out of time for this program. It has been a fun couple of days here in Washington, D.C. We appreciate you tuning in.